CJAM 99.1 FM programming is hosted almost exclusively by community volunteers. The views and opinions expressed on the following program are that of the host and their guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of CJAM FM. For more information and resources, visit our website at cjam.ca.
Hi, I'm Samantha, a past guest on CJAM's HandyLink. You're listening to HandyLink on CJAM 99.1 FM, reaching high ground in Windsor, Detroit.
Welcome to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. In this segment of our show, I'll be chatting with Lauren LaFrancois. She'll be telling us a little bit about Lola's Roundtable. So, can you tell me a little bit about Lola's Roundtable?
Yes. Lola's Roundtable is a not-for-profit respite service geared towards adults with disabilities serving Windsor Essex County. We currently offer a day program operating Monday to Friday, 9 to 3, where our members are able to come here and foster friendships and build on social skills and work on their independence and life skills and have fun.
So, what types of disabilities are most commonly seen in your work?
Well, it kind of varies. I do notice that there are a lot of families who have a member with autism, and they often need programs like this. However, my program, just based on how it went, most of the people in our program actually have Down syndrome. But we try to offer supports to anybody who needs it. There's just certain things we can't offer just based off of like the limitations we have on our building and like lack of staffing.
So how do you reach out to the disability community to let them know that your services are available?
Well, for me specifically, I've been working in this sector for so long. I've been in the field for probably just under 12 years. So I do have a lot of connections based off of other places I worked, which is what helped me get started. And then a lot of it actually over the past like 4.5 years has been word of mouth and social media. So I made a Facebook page, I made an Instagram page, and slowly but surely people just started talking about us.
So what are some of the benefits of having individuals with disabilities in a community setting where they can foster those friendships and day-to-day skills you mentioned?
Okay, do you mean benefits for them or for other people in the community?
Benefits for them in terms of just alleviating those stereotypes and misperceptions and the isolation that can come with a disability.
Yeah, for them, I think, yeah, the isolation, like to help the community understand how not to isolate them. They do bring a lot of value into our community, and they're the exact same as us. They want the same things as us. They want to have jobs, they want to contribute, they want to socialize, they want to have relationships, and sometimes it's hard for them to do that without a little bit of advocacy from a place like Lolas or other respites, because, you know, families just, they can't do what we do. They have to go to work. So that opportunity isn't always there for them. So they benefit from us and from being in the community in that way. They get a lot of purpose going out and doing stuff, meeting people, creating and building friendships with people who aren't paid workers, which I think is really important.
So by being out in the community, do you think that sort of builds a bridge of understanding? I mean, it's easy to come at it from a place where you think disability is what's written in a textbook without actually knowing someone who's living with it day to day.
Yeah. I mean, I guess I have a different view. When I look at these guys, I don't see disability. I see tons and tons and tons of different abilities, and I see a lot of qualities in them that a lot of people don't actually have. So, I want other people in the community to be able to view them in that same light, and not look at them and say that person has a disability, and then kind of paint whatever picture they want about them based on that disability and assume that maybe they can't do something that they can do because they have a disability.
That's exactly as it should be. So if you could send any message to the community about why it is we should keep inclusion at the forefront, what would you say?
I think, honestly, they just need to be treated the way you would treat anybody. Treat them kindly. Don't put their disability first. Sometimes they need help, and sometimes we need help. Like, we all have different abilities. They have different abilities. And I think that everybody should just embrace the abilities that they do have and encourage them to be their best selves the way that we do with everybody else in the community.
So, in your time with Lola's Roundtable, is there any success story that stands out for you?
With the people supported, you mean?
Yes.
Yes, okay. One of my favorite stories, there's two, and they're somewhat similar, but there was a gentleman, and he actually started coming to me about 4 years ago, and it was almost impossible to get him to even try to come and see if he liked it, because he was a really big homebody. Like, he would just rather stay at home. He didn't find the need to be out in the community. He didn't really find the need to make friends. It just wasn't something he was interested in. But his mom kind of encouraged him to come out and try it. So the first thing we ever did was she met me with another gentleman I support at a bowling place, and she waited for him to feel comfortable. He said, "Fine, Leah, go get out of here." She left, and he went out for dinner with us. He bowled with us. He went to the movies with us. And ever since that day, he has never missed a day here, because it means everything to him to come here. So that's a really huge success story, that we had a gentleman that didn't want to ever leave his house who will not miss a day coming here anymore, which is really cool. I'm flattered by it that he wants to come here, and he often will say to people, like, "I'm going to see my friends. I'm here to see my friends. I'm here to hang out." And he will come on extra days if he knows there's a birthday, because he doesn't want to miss out on, you know, giving them a gift. And that friendship building was huge for him, and it meant everything to him to come here for that. Another gentleman, he was just very quiet, timid, didn't really initiate anything. You would kind of have to say, "Hey, come on, like, come do this," and he would. And then you'd have to do a lot of prompting and encouragement to get him to participate in any activity. Now today, this gentleman will, if I ask him, "What do you want to see this month? What do you want to do this month?" He will name off like 10 different things he wants to see. He initiates his own activities. He's more social than I've ever seen him be ever here. He talks more, like, and he wants to have a conversation more with his friends, which is very cool to see. And he values his independence a lot more, which is very cool. Another neat success story, I guess, would be a lady that comes here. She was, again, another lady who was very quiet. She didn't really initiate a lot of anything. And you had to do the same thing as the last gentleman, just kind of encourage her to do it. Today, she's similar to him where she's living her best life. She sings, she dances, she says whatever she wants, she requests what she wants to see in her month. She created an amazing friendship with another gentleman here, and like it's like the most magical friendship to see and watch blossom. It's very cool. So those are just a few success stories for these guys that I like sharing.
Like to thank you for taking time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a second.
Oh, no problem. Yeah.
In this segment of our show, Jeff Thiessen will be giving us an update on his parasport work. So what's the latest with parasport?
Well, we have, and thanks first for having me on, Cam. Canada Summer Games are in Niagara. And we have a regional office in Niagara, and are playing a really significant role for parasport provincially at the games. They have something called Niagara Place. It's a festival, 15-day activation. And what we're doing is inviting partners into our footprint, our space there, each day to demonstrate a different parasport. So over the 15 days, visitors will get a chance to try a variety of different parasports, from sitting volleyball to bocce to the traditionals like wheelchair basketball and wheelchair tennis and on and on. So, exciting time for us here in Niagara, being part of the Niagara 2022 Games.
So what are some of the benefits for the community of seeing demonstrations of these parasports, perhaps for the first time?
We often hear that, I never knew that parasport existed, or we hear that, wow, it's more challenging than it looks. You know, a lot of, the traditional or conventional awareness comes from it, but an appreciation and a respect for the athletes that play that sport. And, you know, through the awareness aspect, someone trying it may not have a disability, may have a neighbor that does, or a niece or a nephew, or a grandson or granddaughter, and that's important for us for people to really have a hands-on experience with it, to see what it's all about. So it's not such a nebulous thing, parasport, you know. So yeah, we're really looking forward to that. We're expecting, according to the organizers, over 100,000 people to come through this festival area. So great opportunity to spread the word.
So by seeing these sports in operation, might speak to tearing down some of the myths surrounding parasport, as you alluded to. Are there any others that you hope these demonstrations help to clear up?
Well, you know, we had a really good question about myths and misperceptions. And one that I talk about a lot is that, you know, parasport, we talk about inclusivity. We want it to be included, and that's not a one-way street. We want those who don't have a disability or a visible, you know, physical disability to participate as well. And I think that's a big thing that we're trying to promote, that these are sports that families can do together. A group of friends can do together. Hop in the wheelchair. You can stand up and get out at the end of the game, or sit down for a game of sitting volleyball. Everybody can do it. And we saw that experientially through the winter. We launched a Niagara Sledge Hockey League, and probably half, maybe even more, of our players did not have a disability, but were there with sons and daughters, friends, brothers and sisters, and it just made for real community. And I think that's a really important concept in all this, that we're all part of this community, and we can intersect as well.
So, do you find that parasport is as high-level or fast-paced as the able-bodied equivalent would tend to be?
I guess it would depend on the sport. Tennis, lots of folks that are wheelchair users play with stand-up players. You know, one different rule about the two bounce. Sledge hockey can get pretty quick, pretty aggressive chimes, and you know about wheelchair rugby, too, formerly known as murder ball, for good reason. City volleyball is a very fast-paced game. You're closer to the net. The net is lower. So, there's a participatory level, recreational level, but there's pathways for those that are elite in the sport to take it as far as they like.
So I'm guessing it would have an enormous mental health impact, especially on someone with a newly acquired disability, to find out that their world is still open in sport.
Yeah, and that's a really important touch point as well. And I'm someone that had an injury when I was young, I was 11, lost both hands in an accident. I was a very sporty kid, and you know, the first misconception back to that for me was, I'm never going to be able to play sports again, and how wrong that was. But we do understand that, you know, people with disabilities, particularly newly acquired, there's confidence issues, there's self-esteem issues, body image, and sport is a great equalizer and a pretty healthy place to build both physically and mentally. And all those sort of intangibles like confidence and self-esteem and friendships and fun.
So what are the next steps for Parasport in getting ready for the festival and just reaching out to the community?
Yeah, it's the big undertaking on our part. There's a lot of moving parts. When, you know, we talked about 14 or 15 different sports, and each are being co-hosted by a provincial organization. So Ontario Volleyball Association, for example, with City Volleyball, and then the local Niagara, or Brock Niagara Penguins, who have a City Volleyball program. So we've brought a lot of partners together. We want to be the stage for them, and we're doing the promotion for them as well. Each day we're sending out, you know, through social media and some of our other media activity, promoting their presence there at the games. Come and check them out. Really, we're trying to direct new participants to those sport organizations and to those clubs and programs that offer them. So that's a big part of what we do, and we will certainly continue that. To add to that, we just launched what we're calling the Parasport Resource and Support Center. It's a one-of-a-kind hub or portal for, can't necessarily say all things Parasport in Ontario, but many things. From sports and clubs and research and ambassadors. So we're trying to, again, be that stage for the performers that are out there doing the work in the community and connecting people from the disability community to them for their expertise.
Like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Always a pleasure, Cam. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thanks. HandyLink will be right back after these commercial messages, so stay tuned.
Attention, Windsor Detroit musicians. CJAM wants you. Each and every month, CJAM creates a local singles compilation exclusively for programmer use. At the end of each month, we tally up the plays and make a chart of top local tunes. Join the CJAM FM Singles Club today and get your music on the radio. Submit your fresh, new tracks to cjammd@gmail.com. with the subject line, Singles Club. You could find yourself at the top of CJAM's monthly local chart. The CJAM Singles Club, just another way we reach higher ground in Windsor and Detroit. More information at cjam.ca.
Welcome back to HandyLink, sponsored by the Italian-Canadian Handy Capable Association, an organization that provides recreational and athletic opportunities for individuals with disabilities in Windsor, Essex. For more information, check out ICHA on Facebook. I'm your host, Cam Wells. Earlier in our show, Lauren LaFrancois told us a little bit about Lola's Roundtable, and Jeff Thiessen gave us an update on the work of Parasport. In this segment of our show, Taylor Mogan will be telling us a little bit about KBG Foundation. So, can you tell me a little bit about the foundation?
Yes, of course. we are a patient advocacy organization that was founded in 2015 by my mother and my father after my eldest brother was diagnosed. When the foundation was started, we had just 60 diagnoses worldwide, and now we have just under 600 right now in our patient group. So that's really exciting. And we have a scientific advisory board as well as a functioning executive board currently.
So, can you tell me a little bit about your family's reaction when your brother was diagnosed?
Yes, of course. So, my siblings were a little too young to remember, the youngest being about 2 at the time when my brother was diagnosed. I think was around the age of 10 or 11 when he was diagnosed. And I think it was really shocking for all of us. My mom was ecstatic because we had an answer. We knew what was going on, and there was something to look forward to. We knew the name, and we knew where to go from this. The only thing was that there was no patient support group for it at the time. So that was the biggest step for us, was getting the patient support first. But my mom was ecstatic. My dad was ready to do anything that was necessary. He was really ready to move forward with anything that my mother needed or anything that was necessary for starting a patient support group. Meanwhile, I was mostly there to support what my family needed, and if anything was necessary fundraising-wise, I was kind of the person that would go out and greet people.
So, how does the condition typically affect a person?
Usually, it has a few different comorbidities that come with it, such as like epilepsy or autism. A lot of our kids show autistic traits or are placed on the spectrum when they're first diagnosed. So there's a lot of behavioral conditions that come along with it, a lot of neurological conditions. Recently, we've been seeing a connection between neurodegenerative diseases, such as Alzheimer's. We have 2 patients currently that are over the age of 50 that have been diagnosed with early onset Alzheimer's. So that's something that we're looking into as well. But for the most part, it can present like autism or it can present like epilepsy. We do have a few things that we're looking at that are comorbid right now, such as occult tethered cord syndrome, which we have a pretty good diagnosis rate of, and things as such. It's very common for kids to get misdiagnosed at first. But we know the typical signs to look for, such as there's a very specific craniofacial type that we look at. And a lot of our kids, if you look at the patient group and you see any of the kids, you see that they all look very, very similar. So that's something else. Like me and my family will be out in public and we'll be like, that kid looks like they have PBT. We wonder. So it's very common to see that. But misdiagnosis is unfortunately something that we deal with how many comorbidities there are.
So, how do you go about encouraging those with KGB to speak to their doctors and say, I think I have this condition, try to avoid some of those mishaps concerning misdiagnosis?
Mm-hmm. One of the biggest things we say is that a patient-doctor relationship is extremely important. Usually, we only have people in the group that have a confirmed diagnosis of KBG. But if there are people that, like, any of our board members will see or any of our scientific advisory board will see, they'll go, I think it's something worth looking into, so we'll fight for it. We'll see what we can find. Otherwise, we really just drive it in strong that having a connection with your doctor and understanding that sometimes you have to be your own advocate and that doctors aren't always going to fight for what they think you need. They're just going to try and deal with the symptoms. You really have to push for what is the root of the problem and how can we treat that as opposed to how can we just get rid of the symptoms. So that's something that's really common between me and my mom, something we talk about a lot, is going, okay, these are the symptoms, but here is why these symptoms are happening. So we really have to drill it in with our patients to be like, hey, you got to fight for yourself. You got to say something's not right, and you got to go, okay, how can we make it right, and things like that.
So how does the foundation reach out to the patient community, let them know that your supports are available?
So we usually do it through our Facebook group. We will put posts out. We also have our scientific advisory board consistently learning and updating their patients. And if they have any new patients they've diagnosed, they send them our way, things like that. So since we've made a name as a patient advocacy group, we have a lot of people coming to us themselves and being like, hey, how can I get into this group? And what are the resources you guys have available? We have entire packets on our website and on our group that patients can go to. We will also post sometimes and be like, hey, if you're wondering what specialist you should see for behavioral aspects of the condition, here's the resources that we have. We'll just kind of put posts out there and be like, whatever you need, take what you can and take it forward to your doctor.
So in your time with the foundation, and of course your family story, has there been any success moment in advocacy that stands out for you?
That is an insanely good question, because there are a lot of moments that I can think of that might not necessarily be viewed as success, but for us was an insanely big deal. Very much like getting together a patient advocacy group, that was an amazing start, because when we were diagnosed, we were told, there's no support group. You guys are on your own, and sorry, that's what you guys got to deal with. So just my mom setting up the foundation was an insane success for us, and the fact that we've gotten to 600 patients worldwide. But I think the biggest thing that stood out to me recently was being a part of the World Orphan Drug Congress in Boston. We had our poster shown there, and so we got to network and make a lot of connections there. And I think that was a really big success for us, because it's been moving us towards getting a treatment.
So if you could send any message to the community about the need to keep pushing forward, what would it be?
I love this question. I think it's important to fight for yourself and fight for what you think is right and what you think you need. So if you're noticing that something is up and you're having specialists tell you, there's nothing wrong, we can't see anything wrong, there's got to be nothing wrong, and they're just treating the symptoms versus treating what's actually causing them, it is most important for you to understand that you have a support system in your community and you have other people that can tell you, hey, I experienced that and I did this and this went great, things like that. Like, we have very often patients communicating and going, hey, I live in the same area and I saw this guy and he was really, really good with us, things like that. So it's really good to have a support system and to communicate with those around you and see what helped them so that you can try and help your child or yourself for their progress.
It's interesting you bring that up, in so much as it's just the symptoms being treated, then it's a risk the problem might actually get worse if you're not addressing the underlying cause, guessing.
Yes, it's always extremely interesting to hit on that, because, like, my brother is on the more severe end of some of our affliction cases. He's nonverbal, and he is cognitively like a two-year-old. Meanwhile, some of our other kids can be asked complex tasks, and they can go through with them, or they can ask me complex tasks and go through with them. And so it's really interesting, because you can look at some of these kids and go, they're presenting neurotypical, so just deal with what they're complaining about and they're fine. No, they've still got KVG syndrome, and they've still got other things that might pop up later in life that we want to try and prevent. So it's always interesting to see the severity in certain cases and see how people respond to that, because some doctors will go, okay, you have KVG syndrome, let's look at that, and then some doctors will go, oh, you're backward, and like, occult tethered cord syndrome is something you see in KVG syndrome. I mean, okay, I guess we'll look at it, but otherwise, just take pain meds. Like, it's just, to see how dismissive some people can be is really upsetting, but as long as you know what to look for and you know what to say to doctors, you can always continue to advocate for yourself, even outside of our group.
I'd like to thank you for taking the time out to do this, but if you can stay on the line for a sec, that'd be great.
Yeah, most certainly. I'll stay as long as you need me. I've got nothing else to do.
Thanks. Taylor's interview, my friends, is a reminder how often it is the love of family leads to a love of the disability community. The fact is, it's in every family. It has affected every genetic line at one time or another. Therefore, by showing respect and dignity to those impacted, we're paying homage to those who have come before in our own lines. This has been HandyLink. I'm your host, Cam Wells, reminding you We're all equal. So get on out there and have yourselves a good one. Something tells me you've earned it, folks. We'll see you next week.